Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining me tonight. I've decided tonight that I want to talk a little bit about another bullying case that was sent to me. it's from a small town in upstate New York, Allegheny, which I'm familiar with. And it's about a young man by the name of Gregory Spring. I'm gonna kind of summarize the story that is that was in the paper about this young man. You know, we don't often see kids that make it to 17 that take their life, has been my experience. A lot of the kids that are being bullied and picked on to any great degree are often gone before they're 17, if that's what they're going to do. So that's why this story caught my eye, because this young man apparently fought back to some degree, which, you know, is what Izzy tells us we shouldn't be doing. We should be trying to either take the anger out of the bully by making friends with him, or just, you know, putting yourself in a place that isn't intimidated by saying things like, you know, are you mad at me about something? Did I do something to you? Or why don't you like me? What did I do? Little things like that, which, surprisingly enough, even for somebody like me, who's really not very mean most of the time, if somebody said that to me, I'd instantly feel guilty. And I realized that our really hardcore, already bullied bullies may not be as sensitive to things like that as I am. But I do think if you do this at home and just try it with each other, kind of a little role-playing like we've done on the air, I think you'll understand where I'm coming from. I really do think it has its worth, and if we could start thinking about doing things like that and talking about those things to our kids, maybe we'd quit getting all these articles. I stopped for a while reporting some of these things because I started feeling as though I was zeroing in on a lot of the tragedy and not talking enough about some of the positive things, such as some of the organizations that I've brought up, the 211, the organization that actually helps homeless people, and all the places I looked up that I found where people could go if they didn't have a place to live. Some people choose to be homeless. Some people choose that lifestyle. The difference, of course, being when we're talking about bullied kids, they don't choose that by any stretch of the imagination. So I do believe, though, that the things that we've learned on this show in regard to how to treat somebody who's bullying you are beneficial and certainly are worthy of trying them out. Certainly are worthy of them, you giving them a chance to see if it makes a difference. I realize everybody thinks their scenario is different. I respect that, and I understand that. But because of that, it doesn't mean that there couldn't be a generalized fix for all of them. So instead of assuming that your situation is different, please try to give what we've talked about on this show a chance and see if it helps your situation. And if you're the parents of a child that you are afraid maybe going through things like that, we've talked about all the different signs that you can look for. If you do think that, talk to them about this. The Bully Movie is still available. The Bully Movie is out there. If somebody wants one, I have some here in my home. I would be glad, happy to lend to anyone who would like to watch them. So let's read or summarize this story about a young man from Allegheny, New York. It starts out by saying that a grieving mother says her son, 17-year-old Gregory Spring, is being bullied, even after his death. Very sad opening line indeed. The teen was close to finishing his sophomore year at Allegheny Limestone High School, but his parents say his constant bullying became too much, and Greg unexpectedly took his own life. Greg's mother, Carrie, reached out to News 4. She doesn't want another child to have to go through this. So this was written in memoriam Gregory Spring. Greg loved to play soccer, hunt, and create artistic wood carvings. But the teen was tormented for years by bullies. He was just a very compassionate, very loving, very emotional person that just wanted to be accepted. Sounds like all of us, doesn't it? That's what his mom says about him. Craig suffered from Tourette syndrome and callosum cisgenesis. There is a processing link from the right to the left side of the brain. His was missing, Carrie said. Carrie is his mom. That made it difficult for Craig to understand things. His mom says, as a result, when he was bullied, Greg would question why it was happening to him. He was just distraught, but never showed it to us, she said. Greg attended school at the Allegheny Limestone School District. Carrie said he was bullied from the time he was in fourth grade to his toughest year yet, the 10th grade. That's something else that we don't hear a lot. Bullying seems to drop down statistically when we get into the higher grades. She says he recently broke up with his girlfriend, and a new kid came into the school that tormented him every day. Carrie said there came an incident where Greg actually picked him up and said, "Stop bullying. Bullying isn't good. Bullying is only going to hurt people." The school suspended Greg. And Carrie says the other student was not punished. Okay, now we've talked about that a lot. We've talked about the authorities, such as the teachers, the principals, and even the police, getting involved, and often their involvement doesn't have the kind of results we're looking for. So he gets suspended, and the other boy doesn't get in any trouble at all. The superintendent would not comment on this case and would only say Greg's suicide was a terrible tragedy and the community is grieving. But his mom says even in death, Greg was tormented. On the message board of the funeral home that officiated his service, someone wrote, "Ha ha, he died. I hope he is in hell." Now, I don't know how all of you feel about somebody who writes something like this. And you may be surprised at what I'm going to say. But somebody who wrote something like that is crying just as loud as Greg was. That's a terrible thing to write. And that shows a problem, in a, especially if it's a child, a problem in a child who would write something like that. With her son gone, Carrie says all she can do is fight to make sure this never happens again. When a bully is brought to your attention, it needs to be hit head on and stopped immediately, Carrie said. Carrie says her husband spoke with state attorney Kathy Young about creating tougher laws to stop bullies and get schools to step in, even if they think the bullying is a small encounter. The superintendent of the district, Dr. Karen Geelan, released the following statement regarding Spring, would be Greg's, death. "Any allegation of bullying is taken very seriously by the district, and we have a comprehensive anti-bullying policy pursuant to which I conducted an investigation as soon as I was advised that bullying might have been involved in any way with Greg Spring's tragic death. I have conducted a thorough investigation, and to the extent we can determine it, I have determined the young man was not bullied. Based on information received from the police, the untimely loss of this student's life may be attributed to a factor or factors altogether unrelated to bullying." Dr. Gelin added that the school has a bullying policy in place and programs to address bullying, including bully box locations in the school, online bully reporting, and regular intervention team meetings. Mental health counselor Lynn Shine says if your child starts acting differently or fighting to do normal activities, these could be warning signs your child is being bullied. You have an outgoing child and all of a sudden they get quiet. You have a child that's on the cell phone a lot or on the computer a lot and they start to withdraw. If your child is having a hard time expressing what's going on, she says loved ones should keep open lines of communication so the child feels comfortable sharing. Now, I'm going to stop right here because I'm afraid that I will get carried away and not come back to this. It seems like, from everything I just went over, that indeed mom knew about this, and indeed mom tried to step in, and indeed mom understood with his challenges that he was having problems. And it sounds to me like he had a girlfriend, he had things going on in his life, things, you know, he was handling himself at 17 and was doing the things he needed to do. And yet, he still didn't feel like he fit in. He still didn't feel like he belonged. He still didn't feel like he was accepted. And those are all the things that we talk about here all the time. And very sadly, we have adults, we have children, I'm going to say as young as 4, who don't feel like they fit in someplace. And when you see that and you're a teacher, and after being in school, if he's 17, he's been in school almost 12 years, right? If you count kindergarten, somebody should have been paying attention and realizing that he was going through a struggle. So the fact that this commissioner or whatever she is figures she went through all the loops and dotted all of her I's, the fact still remains this child took his own life. If you're, and to keep open lines of communication, it sounds to me like he did. Otherwise, his mom wouldn't have known everything and wouldn't have come to them for help. People often do that when children are young, and they give it up somehow when they are teens because the kids don't want to do that. And I don't know what she means by that. I guess she means sharing. But you should really keep that common time that you're speaking and connecting. When tragedy does happen, Shine says it's common for teens to copy the action. Shine says it's important to have counselors available to students both inside and outside of school. I think that there needs to be more programs when something like this happens. I think the counselors need to push in and talk to everyone in small groups because it does impact everyone. Shine says if a student is being bullied in school, parents should contact the school psychologist, counselor, or social worker. She says they will be more equipped to deal with those issues. If parents feel their child's well-being or life is in jeopardy, Shine says they should contact the law enforcement. However, when taking that step, parents should gather proof to present to officials. Now, for me, that lady, whoever she is, and the rest of the school officials there are in deeper denial than this young man ever thought of being. Their answers are like they've taken him off of some kind of a psychology book or something. And we all know we have to have open lines of communication. We all know we have to pay attention. We all know when our kids are sad, when our kids are mad, when our kids are having a problem. The problem is that what is a policeman going to do? A policeman is our enforcer. What is he going to do to help? Yes, I think it's a good idea that she said contact the psychologist, have some active communication going on in the school. But again, what have we talked about so many times? That's the fact that nobody, obviously nobody, was paying attention. If after finding out all the stuff that went on, that they're denying that there was any trouble, if there was an altercation between this young man and another kid, they don't talk about talking to the girlfriend. They don't talk about any of his friends. For me, it's another one of those scenarios where they just haven't cared enough and they're passing the buck. So I'm going to bring Shelley in, and if any of you are out there and would like to say anything about this particular story, I think this story shows us that we still don't get it. We still really, really don't get it. Hi, Shell. How you doing?
Hey, Ray. I'm doing pretty good. Yeah.
What did you think of that story?
Yeah, it's like the same old stuff we've been hearing all along. It's like it almost seems like every time a child takes his or her own life as a result of bullying, that there's like a major cover-up. Instead of just addressing what the problems are and trying to do things differently, they make believe it didn't happen. It's astonishing to me.
And the fact that again, he fights back. Finally, you have a mild-mannered kid. Let's pretend that we didn't hear anything else. We're teachers in the school, say, or we're administration in the school, and we see a very mild-mannered. I mean, I looked at his picture. He's a thin young man, very preppy looking, and the things that he's interested in school as well. Now, if you're a teacher in this school or any adult in this school, you must realize that this is a child that doesn't start trouble, isn't fighting with anybody, all the normal things. He's not a troublemaker.
Right.
They don't say anything about the fact that he's involved with drugs or he's doing anything like that. So he's a mild-mannered, sounds like pretty sweet kid. And one day
right.
He loses his temper so much that he picks up another kid. Wouldn't that at least tell you something's wrong someplace?
Right. I mean, evidently, yeah, I know. That's astonishing. It doesn't make any sense. There would be no reason for it. Did they give a reason why he picked up? I mean, did they even investigate why he picked up the other kid, or did they just suspend him?
No, they just suspended him, and the only one who said there was a reason for it was Mom. And, of course, you know, who listens to Mom? Mom
right.
is just taking the side of her child, and that's how that's how people take it. You know, you can't believe a mom. A mom is for sure going to say her kid's right and not wrong. Well, I got news for you. There's been many times in my life when I've gone in and said, no, you're right. This is my kid's fault. And there's been a couple times when that's been real hard for me to do. And
okay.
I know other moms that have done the same thing. So I think that's another one of those, mental blocks that people have. The truth is the truth.
It's like a stereotype. You know, they make an assumption. Mm-hmm. And again, things need to be handled on a case-by-case basis because there are some parents that live in denial and they just don't want to see what their kids are doing. And there are parents that take responsibility. And if they find out their child's doing something, they want to prevent it from happening again. So again, you can't treat all parents because some parents are not responsible. Just like with everything else. You know, there's not one blanket solution. You have to look at the individuals that are involved.
Well, and then when they analyzed and the administration there says she looked through everything and it's other reasons that he took his own life. But she gives no other reasons. She just says it's other reasons that he took his own life. So what the hell does that mean? Does that mean she's not sure what they were? She just knows it didn't have anything to do with their school. That must be just what she's saying. So for me, this, as I said, you know, I haven't read any stories like this in a while because I started feeling like we were dredging up all the tragedy that's out there and not talking about anything positive. And in my journey that I've been on the last few years, I know there's lots of positive stuff, and I know there's lots of wonderful people. So, and we broadened our horizons a little bit to talk about a little bit about politics and a little bit about some of the other stuff that's going on out there that all attributes to the unrest. And the unrest is one of our problems because the unrest it's a big part of what's going on with the kids. You know, people who think kids don't know what is going on, they may not know the exact story. But believe me, a child knows when things are at unrest. They know when things are not the way they're supposed to be, always.
Right.
So
right.
Things like this that we've talked about recently, and one of the other things that we're going to talk about tonight, even though they don't quite get it, they kind of get it. They kind of get that things are not right. So everything can be attributed to unkindness when that's what's going on. Today I was in a it's like a drug and alcohol rehab place that I went and met some people and talked to them about different things, and they do an amazing job. And while I was in there, I saw people who were obviously mentally challenged. I saw people who were probably street people. I saw people who had various challenges that they were dealing with. And it was a very big place, and it seemed as though everybody was very gentle and very kind. And yet, I also realized that some of the people that were there, some of the, I don't know what to call them, the recipients of this kindness, had probably been that way for their whole life. So they had been in and out of places like I was at today forever, because some of them were my age.
Wow.
And they were still coming to a place like that to get help and to get counseling and to get meds and all the things that come with a place like that. And I found it to be, kind of an eye-opener, I guess. Kind of an eye-opener. I gave my card to a couple of the counselors, told them I would love to have them talk on the show so we mm-hmm. could hear what they actually offer to the young people out there, hear what they have to say from their point of view, what the bullying side of things are like, if they think that bullying is still one of our major problems, or they think it's drugs and alcohol. It would be interesting to hear from people who deal mostly with those kind of things and still hear what they have to say in regard to the problem itself. You know, everything has a beginning and everything has an end. And,
right.
So it's kind of like, what came first, the chicken or the egg, I guess? What came first, the bullying or the dependency of things that alter your personality? Or what? I find it all to be, first of all, very interesting, obviously, and sometimes kind of sad. But I think it's all intertwined. It just is all connected in one way or another. So I look forward to having a couple of these people that I met today talk on the show, and that will be coming soon, I hope. But it did lead me to, when I left there, I thought, I am going to talk about this story about this Greg kid, because it seems at face value to be nothing that was a big deal. Even when Mom talks about his bullying, she doesn't pinpoint. And the fact that he had Tourette's syndrome, is everybody aware of what Tourette's syndrome, what the ramifications are of Tourette's syndrome? Do you understand Tourette's? Syndrome?
The only thing I know about Tourette's, and I think it's what most people think about it, is that the person lacks impulse control and they'll blurt out profanities and things like that. But I know that it's a more complex disorder than just that symptom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of times, from what I understand, it has
facial tics and stuff. I know that there's
that
go along with.
That's the word I was trying to figure out words to say that. Yes, there's usually a problem with their not their motor skills, I guess, but like tics. I say tics, and then I wonder if everybody knows what a tic is. But it's it is like a lack of control of some of those kind of silly things, you know, like clicking your jaw or winking your eye or tilting your head. And sometimes it is, it's very, very noticeable. And I've also seen on television years ago when Tourette syndrome was first really becoming understood, they had some young people and some older people on television with it and even screaming out things like profanities and things like that. And I think it's kind of scary to somebody who doesn't know what it is. And then again, I would like to know if this young man was diagnosed with TS, if it was explained to other classmates, if there was an opportunity to say, okay, here's what's going on with Greg. He's got Tourette syndrome, and this will make him do this, and this will make him do that. And if those things were explained so there was a little bit of empathy and compassion instead of just making fun of him. But they don't say anything like that in the story. So, but I do think, I know I've told the story before about my son David, about him having severe eczema and the kids in school calling him Alligator Boy. And, I mean, he was just little, 5, 6, 7 years old. And even teachers would call him in front of the classroom and say, David, look at your hands. Go wash your hands right away. And his hands would get, in the creases, they would get, like, black. And they didn't come clean, you know, because it was like, it was like, there were like cracks way into his skin between his knuckles and around his fingernails and everything. His hands were the worst part for a very long time. So I'd go to school and I'd talk in front of the class and I'd tell everybody, David has eczema. It's not catching. You can touch it. They wouldn't hold his hand in a circle because his hands felt, you know, like sharp in some places.
Right.
Because
right.
they would be cut so bad. So kids called him Alligator Boy and wouldn't touch his hands. But I must tell you, the kids understood it quicker with a lot more adult behavior than most of the adults. So I'd have to wonder if that was taken care of for him, because of all the things I can imagine being wrong with a child aside from some kind of a deformity, Tourette syndrome would be right up there in the top three, wouldn't you think, for causing to be picked on?
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, and see, again, and we've discussed this before, but, you know, school is supposed to prepare you for life. I don't understand why social skills aren't taught on a more broad level, where teachers should actually, that there should be a class where they talk about the differences in each other and mm-hmm. Like, get rid of the pink elephant in the middle of the room. Let's talk about it, okay? You're mm-hmm. different than me because you're a different religion. You're different than me because your skin's a different color. You're different than me because you have a different sexual orientation. And what does it all mean? Do you know what it means? It means absolutely nothing. Because mm-hmm. if I talk to the three of you, I'm going to find out you all want the same things in life. You just have different attributes about yourself. So let's take it off mm-hmm. the table. It's a non-starter. It's a big nothing. All right, and let's put it where it belongs, which is just, you know, making, like you said, making a rainbow. You know, it just means that there's differences in us, you know, but there's
right.
nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to give you the right to judge somebody because they're different than you. It's just strictly, you know, a different characteristic, no different than somebody's got brown eyes and somebody's got green eyes. It's just another descriptive piece of information about them, you know, and the more the more cultured it is.
And if you really examine all of us, we all have strange mannerisms, all of us. There are some people that I don't let me think for a second, that are always itching their nose. You ever seen anybody that does that? You'll be sitting there talking to them, and every time you turn around, they're rubbing their nose.
Mm-hmm.
Not because their nose itches, not because their nose is running, not because there's a fly on their nose, because it's become a habit. Right. Or somebody who can't sit still. I see young boys a lot have to be pretending they're playing drums all the time, no matter what they're mm-hmm. doing. It's a fidgety habit it's become, and it's a mannerism that they've picked up for some solace. My husband rocks his head. He is almost 70 years old, and he rocks his head to fall asleep at night.
Oh, wow.
And when we first got married, I thought I'd hang on to his head so he'd quit rocking, because in the beginning he'd rock the bed. I would be like seasick, right? And I'd hang on to his feet, or I'd hang on to his head so his feet would rock. And it was his own way of comforting himself.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's going to love when I tell him I said that on the air. But that's what I'm talking about. We all have these kind of funny mannerisms, and we all do different things. So, but again, I have to wonder with this particular story, if all these things were discussed and all the things that are important were done for this kid so that he could have some kind of normalcy. I'm big on sending kids that are just a little bit different from everybody else to public school, because they learn how to fit in and they make friends, and a lot of times the stories are very happy ones. Then on the other hand, sometimes they're not. I see a lot of people now are sending their autistic children to public schools. And in a lot of cases, again, it's wonderful because the child learns to function and learns to keep up with his surroundings or her surroundings, and things are good. But sometimes it's not good, and sometimes it's too traumatic for them to try to fit, you know, themselves into a place where they're not comfortable. So I'm just glad that it's not me that would have to make that kind of a decision. But I would understand from a parent's point of view why they would want to try everything that would make their child feel as big a part of the group of kids as possible.
Right, right.
So I get that, but I do sometimes people will tell me that that's what they're doing, and I have a few minutes of thinking, oh, I hope that's working out all right, because I could see where that would be very difficult. And this young man had more than that. He had this other condition that I'd never heard of, the right-left brain thing. I never have even heard of that. I'll have to look that up later so I can figure out what it is. But
no, they didn't describe it any more than that?
No, just that there's no connectivity. But our condolences certainly go out to his family, and our sympathy and empathy for what they went through, and for the fact that they lost their child. Nobody wants that to happen. So, but I do think it's important that we keep talking about the fact that Izzy taught us that calling the police is really not the best idea. And sometimes it's not even the best idea to involve, you know, or make the bullying the responsibility of the teachers and the principal and all that. It has to be on a much more personal level, taking care of the bullying. So now let's jump to this poor young man. Big controversy online about which side are you on? It says our government is trying to demonize Edward Snowden. And lots of really pertinent points that I found interesting. And I still don't really know. I just know that he didn't do what I would have expected of somebody who was a trained professional. And I still feel that way. Right or wrong, I don't know. There's something about me because I mind well or something. I just think that if he thinks what we're doing is bad, what he did is just as bad. So, in my opinion. But here's this, it's a very interesting article about where he is, and there are even suggestions that he's taken shelter in the Ecuadorian embassy in Moscow. And he chose all countries that are, you know, China, Russia, Cuba, Venezuela, and Ecuador that, you know, are, first of all, doing a lot worse things to their people than we are, and second of all, are not really our allies. But on ABC, they said, what Snowden has revealed has caused irreversible and significant damage to our country and to our allies. And then on Face the Nation, Dianne Feinstein, who's a senator, she said, I don't think this man is a whistleblower. And then she said, but he also could have stayed and faced the music. I don't think running is a noble thought. Now, that's a very interesting comment, I thought. And on the same token, you have some talk about the fact that he, remember the man that they talked about that years ago turned in the Australian Broadcasting Company and got in trouble, called himself a whistleblower, and he was he got in trouble. But he says I considered Edward Snowden as a whistleblower. I know some have called him a hero. Some have called him a traitor. I focus on what he disclosed. I don't focus on him as a person. He had a belief that what he was exposed to, U.S. actions in secret, were violating human rights and privacy. And I also think he could be very right about that. He says, on a very, very large scale, far beyond anything that had been admitted to date by the government, in the public interest, he made that available. So another interesting point of view. And but at the end of the day, a lot of the comments are about the fact that he ran and he's hiding. And if he did something he's proud of, you know, but then again, you have the controversy that a lot of people think that if he comes back into the States, he's going to be suspiciously gone, dead, whatever. What do you think, Shel?
Well, first of all, I think that our government does dispose of people that they feel are a threat. So I don't really consider him taking off. If he really felt his life was threatened after he did this, if in fact he did it, you know, if in fact the reason he did this was to be a whistleblower, I don't think the fact that he fled the country makes him not a whistleblower, makes him not brave, because, you know, I mean, how many things have come up, you know, or years later, we found out that our government did something that wasn't quite right, you know. And even though this is a great country, many times bad decisions have been made. And
Is being run by human beings, and we all know about them.
Right. Well, that's the point I'm making, you know. And sometimes bad decisions are made, you know. I look at the situation, you know, like when I traveled abroad, you know, there's no scanners in other countries. You know, the scanners that they have at the airport, I won't go through them. I always opt out. And I think it's ludicrous that our country requires them, because there's other ways of getting things on airplanes that you know, so I don't really understand this whole thing with the stupid scanners. They're very dangerous. They tell you at the airports that they're not dangerous, but they are. There's all kinds of medical evidence that proves that the scanners cause health problems. And for people that fly a lot and they're constantly going through them, they're just increasing their exposure. So, you know, so I opt out. But I go through such abuse sometimes at some of the airports. You know, it's an option you have to opt out, and yet I'm treated like there's something wrong with me for wanting to opt out because I don't want to expose myself to these electromagnetics. And, you know, what struck me is when I traveled abroad is that I didn't have to go through any of them in other countries. They just don't have them. You know, this is strictly an America thing. And it's, you know, sometimes I wonder if there's another agenda there with these stupid scanners, because I just have my own suspicions that they're not set up to do what they're telling us they're set up to do, you know. And I don't know what other purpose there would be, but I don't understand why no other country has them, and I don't understand why they don't divulge the true health hazards of them. And then when you mention that you've done the research, they talk to you like you're an imbecile. You know, they're very, very arrogant of the TSA agents. But the cancer amongst TSA agents is almost at an epidemic level. And it's, you know, it's something that a lot of research has been done about, but they you know, you only find this out a little bit to be. They won't publish it, like, on an ABC News or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, so I know that there are decisions that our government makes about things. I don't know, I still don't understand the total story about Snowden, you know, so I'm still kind of on the fence about what I think of him. I still don't. The one thing I do agree with you on is how he handled it, because, and this is what I said last time, and I'm still staying with this. I've seen like documentaries and movies about other whistleblowers, maybe not on the government level, but maybe on. Well, no, there was actually one on the government level. But what these whistleblowers do is they said, look, this is what's happening. I can't abide it anymore, and this is how we have to fix it. This guy just kind of like plopped it out there and then took off. Okay, so what's the resolution? So now you're divulging this to the American people, but you didn't offer any kind of a solution. What are we supposed to do with the information now? So that's where I agree with you, that the way he handled it was very inappropriate, because he just kind of like threw it out there, you know, uncovered this big secret, according to him, which a lot of people already knew about, but he supposedly uncovered this big secret, but he didn't offer any solution, and he didn't offer any recommendations of what to do with it. If he really wanted to be a whistleblower, if he really wanted to make a difference and help the American public, and let's say that one section of the government wasn't doing something that was quite right, okay, you know, so how do we fix it? Who do we talk to? What government agency is over that government agency? You know, who would we go to then to make things better or to make them fairer, you know, or protect ourselves, you know? But he didn't offer any of that. He just said, this is what we're doing. I don't like it anymore, and I wanted to make sure you guys knew about it. Well, thanks a lot. It's very helpful. You know?
Well, and you know, the little things such as, you know, just – like I said the other night, blurting it out to the Guardian newspaper, you know, how do we know that he didn't make a whole bunch of money doing that? How do we know that he didn't have...
The Guardian actually has an article out right now. I started reading it before, but I didn't get to get through it, about why he came to them. And how it happened that he chose them as his vehicle. No, but like I said, I didn't get through it. But you can The Guardian actually has like a rebuttal article about this whole thing and how they got involved.
Well, I'm sure that they do. They would be pretty remiss in protecting themselves if they didn't. But I don't know. You know,
well, we're still
you and I
Guardian.
Both know you and I both know that the different places you work, there's always stuff that is not what it seems, or is more than what it seems. It's kind of like, you know, and like we said the other night, the what do they call it, the prism thing has been. We've talked about that now for a couple of years, about the fact, the Operation Prism. And, again, part of this is because you had a lot of people complaining about their safety, complaining about 911 and this recent thing with Boston and all the other things that happened. What's the matter with our national security? Why aren't they keeping us safe? And so then they go overboard. They, you know, they get ridiculous. You know, it's feast or famine. So now everybody's under controversy. Everybody's under some kind of illegal covert spying, which part of me thinks is kind of like ridiculously funny. If it didn't cause any problems, but I think to myself, you know, why must everything be black or white? Why can't there be a little bit of covertness in regard to checking on people that come from other countries and maybe have a questionable history in the other countries, and being able to keep an eye on people like that? I would think with all the money that we pay to those people that are doing those kind of jobs, that that would be something that they did. But to just randomly start picking phone numbers or emails and things like that and start spying on other people sounds to me like a bunch of old biddies. You know, who cares? Like I said to you today, people can watch me all day long. They're going to be bored to tears. So, but you know.
The problem is, and the reason people get concerned about this is because our government was always against that type of activity. They actually had laws. Now, ever since 9/11 happened, okay, and that's even a controversial subject, but even once 9/11 happened, now all of a sudden the gloves are off, and now all of a sudden our government can do a lot of things that before 9/11 they couldn't do, okay, dealing with our personal liberties and things like that. So the concern of people that are kind of keeping an eye on some of the conduct of the government is that they don't want to get into McCarthyism again, where somebody says something very innocuous, okay, or in a way that, like you say something against the pharmaceutical industry, which is very powerful, or you say something like what happened to Oprah, you say something against the Meat and Dairy Council, okay, against these organizations, these businesses that are billion-dollar industries, in some cases trillion-dollar industries, and now all of a sudden you find yourself being brought up on charges because now they can wiretap your home and they don't even need to have a cause, and they hear you say something that you don't even mean anything by, and now all of a sudden you're being labeled as somebody who's not patriotic, or maybe who's a threat, or who's this or who's that, over comments that are meaningless, you know? But now you've got somebody listening in on your calls who is going out of their way to look for, you know, if you look for something bad and that's what you're expecting, you're going to find it, even if you have to make it up. So that's where the concern
is. Well, that's
like,
when you talk about McCarthyism, that's exactly what happened there. And you'd have think, oh, well, a few English lessons would be good. you would think that a couple lessons would have been learned. You would think that that's exactly true, everything that you just said. And what else do we talk about on this show so frequently is called interpretation, and who you put in charge of what, and what kind of sensibilities these people have.
Right.
You know, it's just not as cut and dried as you might think it is. I am incredibly glad that it's not my job to figure out whether this Ed Snowden is a good guy or a bad guy. Because I truly don't know. I truly, truly don't know. And even not that he's a good guy or a bad guy, if he did something that he thought was right for the right reasons, or he did something that he thought was right for the wrong reasons. So, you know, and we'll never know by what gets released to the media, because then, again, you're all talking about all these other hundreds of interpretations of what they learn and how they decipher it. So
exactly.
I just have to hope that out there somehow there's somebody with a whole lot of common sense who can step in and sorry all you guys out there, but it's probably going to have to be a woman, and they're going to have to step up to the plate and say, look, enough with all this nonsense. Yes, we have to keep an eye on our borders. Yes, we have to keep an eye on who comes in. I mean, every airplane has to register if they're flying. If you got an unregistered airplane flying, yeah, that should be a red flag for sure. There are certain things that should never go unnoticed, because we are the United States of America and we need to be kept safe, because there are other countries that would like to take us down, take us out, own us, all of the above. But again, there has to be some common sense played into this. What do you think? I wasn't going to talk about this week, but it's just such a small subject. While we're on the subject of right and wrong and interpretation, what do you think of the Paula Deen saga? Do you know anything about that?
The what?
Paula Deen, the chef, the southern chef that makes all the fattening food with all the butter in it and everything. Do you know about her?
Uh-huh. No.
She was diagnosed with diabetes here a while back, and so then she started taking all the butter out of all of her food and lost a whole bunch of weight. And now she's doing real good, but apparently, I don't know where she did it, when this even happened, but she used the N-word talking about somebody who held a gun to her head and robbed her when she worked in a bank. And she was relaying this story and referred to the man who held the gun as the N-word. And they canceled her show, her cooking show. She was made to go on television and make a public apology for you know, telling this story and using that word and all this other kind of stuff. And I'm telling you, Shelley, she looks like somebody is standing underneath her with a big, long poker, telling her what to say and poking her the minute she doesn't say something right. She's twisting her fingers. She's embarrassed to death. And I got to say, I mean, I don't appreciate that word either. You know how I feel about that word. But she is a grown-up. She was under duress. I mean, for God's sakes.
What did she say?
I think she was telling the story, but it was on national TV. And she was telling the story about having a gun, this guy robbing her and having a gun up to her head, and that's what she called him. And that's probably what she called him when it happened. You know, the truth is the truth. But nobody's going to take into account that she was scared to death and that she was trying to tell a story and let it have as much drama as it could have because she was trying to be entertaining.
Well, I have two comments about that since I don't know the whole story. If this happened, if she was getting interviewed like right after it happened or something and she was still in the throes of emotion and then that slipped out, that's one thing. But if this was an interview after the fact, after everything had calmed down and she used that word, then I don't know, that's pretty inappropriate. And if you're going to flip that out on national television, that means you're a bigot. I'm sorry. That word has never slipped out of my mouth ever, and I've had situations, you know, with black people, and but I've also had very, you know, good situation with black people. I almost, you know that I was engaged to a black man for a year, you know, so it's like, you know, so I'm not prejudiced, but that word has never accidentally slipped out of my mouth ever, you know.
Yeah.
I'm 55 years old and I've been angry and it's never come out.
Yeah, that's because you're intelligent and you have some social education. I'm not too sure somebody like Paula Deen does. I think she made it big, making real sweet, fattening food that everybody loves but nobody should eat, and made herself, a small kingdom. But it's still... There's still some, you know, again, it's gone overboard. So she said it.
I don't know that she
should
have lost
something.
Her show. Yeah, I don't think she should
That's
have lost her
saying.
Show. But I definitely think that she should have been asked to apologize. But see, if she really was apologetic, she would have been able to maintain herself. She would have gone on there and say, look, I'm so sorry. I was under duress. I should never have allowed that word to slip out of my mouth. I am so sorry, you know, blah, 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 whatever. You know, if you come across like you really are a decent human being and in the throes of emotion, something just slipped out, people can be very forgiving also, you know, because they might have been in the same situation themselves at some point. You know, personally, if there was somebody that I had respect for and they did something that was a little off, but then they gave a sincere apology, I'm not going to hold a grudge against them. People make mistakes. I mean, there, but for the grace of God, I go on. I mean, I've made some mistakes, and, you know, I would hope people wouldn't hold it against me if I sincerely apologized and then did something to make amends. But I do agree with you that losing her show, I think that's overboard. Because
well,
the bottom
being
line is,
ostracized
it is just a name.
Like this.
Whether it's offensive or not, it is just name calling, for God's sake.
Well, and it is, and it's rude, and it shows no class. But good God Almighty, Donald Trump's all over it, and he's got about as much class as my Chewbacca.
I know.
So, I mean, you know, but it just seems to, you know, everything's overboard is the point I'm trying to make, and that's what made me think of her. Everything, it's either not at all or so far over the edge that you don't even see it anymore.
Right.
Because,
meanwhile, somebody else can use that word, but because of their position or stature, it's completely, like, overshadowed, like nothing happened, you know. So for me,
if you want to get really upset about something, get upset about the fact that we don't make as much money as men. You want to take a stand about something, take a stand about that. If you want to really get upset about something, take a stand about the fact that we're not all treated equally, whether you're a woman or a black man or a Hawaiian or a Jewish person or whatever you are. In some circles, you are not unequal to the other people in that circle. No matter where you go, fat people are not unequal to size sixes. It's everywhere. It's all over. And instead of picking a fight over something, a slip of a tongue, yes, she should be ashamed of herself. She should, you know, somebody should look at her and say, what the hell's the matter with you? Here you are, a millionaire. So many people love you and admire you and enjoy what you've done, and you said something like that, you know, what the hell's wrong with you? But enough already.
And I'm
Do
sure
you
a
get
lot
it?
Of her audience were black people, and now she's just offended all of them.
Exactly. I mean, the who did she hurt the most?
Yeah,
Paula
she hurt
Deen.
Herself, definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She hurt herself. But, you know, this thing that we all knew about, and everybody's also upset about, but everybody that you talk to, well, we've known that for years that they're doing that. That's what everybody says. Everybody that I've said anything to. Well, you know that they're doing that, Rainey. You must know that they've been doing that since this time and this time. That's what everybody has said to me, Shelley, bar none. And yet, this goofy kid sticks his head out on a tightrope and says, this is what we're doing, and I know it because I do it. And then runs away from home. I don't know. For me, so many things are so much more important, honey. So much more important.
That's why I don't understand why our government is making such a big deal about it, because it has been kind of common knowledge out there, you know, like for over a year that I'm aware of. So why are they saying he compromised or anything? I mean, who the hell am I? How did I know about it? You know, it was just, you know, scuttlebutt and different things that you find on the internet. So it's like, that's another reason why I say I don't understand why he felt the need to do this, because it was kind of already out there from other sources. You know?
Well, that's it. That's the whole thing. And now, you know, now that's all anybody can talk about when there's still all this other stuff going on, such as bullying, such as children dying in cars where mom leaves them inside while she runs in the store or something.
Oh,
I mean, you know, there's a million things that are going on that in my eyes are a lot more tragic and a lot more upsetting than any of this stuff, to be honest with you. And I do want to be protected in the United States of America. I don't want to let go of that fact either. And I do want to know that my kids, who will be around long after I'm gone, and my grandkids and my great-grandkids, that they're still going to live in a free country that they're safe in. I do want that, and I think everybody wants that. So sometimes
there's
a price to pay, right? Sometimes there's just a price to pay, and I think we're still feeling our way as to what that price is going to be. Okay, well, we're almost out of time, and I will I will not be on the air tomorrow night. There's some other stuff going on. I apologize ahead. I will post everybody on Facebook. But I want to say good night and thank you. And thank you, Ms. Shelley, for interesting conversation tonight. And good night to everyone, and God bless. Night, Shel.
Good night. Good night, Reen. Good night, everyone.